Welcome back to the Crossheart Off-Road Podcast, brought to you by Prime Shape Fitness. Welcome to the Crossheart Off-Road Podcast. I'm going to start off with some kind of some news and notes, you could say. First off, there's some people in the YouTube slash the fun world where they just go and buy cool stuff that are doing some cool things. First off, if you guys know who Mark Warman is, he does the Graveyard Cars show. He actually just bought a 2001 TJ, and he's been running around with it. You can follow him on Instagram to kind of see it a little bit, but he's kind of getting into Jeeps. Obviously, he's a Mopar guy, and he picked himself up a cool little TJ. Not sure if he's going to do any like crazy off-roading with it, but he's having a lot of fun just going top-down doors off and having a good time cruising around town. So it's kind of interesting to see that he got into Wranglers a little bit. So he always wanted one, finally picked one up. So cool for him. Another one is Pat McAfee. He was a punter for the Colts. And he has a YouTube show, and it's all based on sports. And it's not safe for work or having kids around because he likes to swear a lot. But it's pretty entertaining. Pat McAfee's show is all, like I said, sports. He breaks it all down. He has a live show on YouTube. You can watch it every day. I kind of put it on in the background when I'm at home, or I watch it later on. He has clips. And he said during one of the things that him and his wife are like, anytime that the Mecum auto auctions are on, they watch it. And they're super into the Mecum stuff, and which is ironic because my wife will roll her eyes if I have Mecum on, but his wife is into it. But so he's out of Indianapolis. That's where his show is, and he has a bunch of his knucklehead buddies and his brother all work together, and they have this great show. I invite you guys to go to YouTube and find it. It's pretty cool. They all break down the news of the day for sports and have some history of sports, and he does some pretty cool things. So check it out for that. But he was at the auction. They had an auction in Indianapolis, and he was at the Mecum live, and he bought a Wrangler. He bought a JK with a 6-speed and a Hemi. So he spent $100,000. He said, I probably overpaid. He's what he said, but the thing is built to the hilt. I think it's got, definitely has 40s on it. It's huge. But not only did he talk a lot about the Jeep and kind of get into it, he goes, it's basically a monster truck. It's fun to drive. But he actually brought the auctioneer on his show to talk about what it's like to be an auctioneer and how you kind of get people excited. And it was very interesting. So find that clip on YouTube. He'll kind of break down how he bought it and had the auctioneer on. And the auctioneer kind of slowed down his voice and kind of talked through it, then sped it back up. And it was pretty interesting. My buddy's dad is an auctioneer, and it's kind of cool to hear some stories. But this guy grew up in an auctioneer's household too. And just got into it at a young age. So, but that's the guy who was auctioning off the car for Mecum Auto Auctions. He had him on a show, which was cool. So I invite you guys to watch that. The reason I'm bringing this all up, because it's entertaining, talks about Jeeps, super cool stuff. And another one is, I don't know if you guys watch this show or not, because sometimes it's a little too, random, but Light Bright on YouTube has a kind of a cool update. As a couple on there, they do a lot of off-roading. They did some stuff with the Ultra 4. They have a JL. They put a Hemi in that. They're willing to do anything in their Jeep, and they lived in it for a long time too. But now they actually bought a house. I think it's in it's definitely down south. I think it's St. George, maybe, not too far from Moab. Anyhow, and now they actually have a builder on site. What's cool about this house is it has a massive garage, and then it has another big garage. So I invite you to check that out. They move in this house, and it just has these huge garage. Basically, I think they got about 8 or 10, maybe 15 stalls worth of cars they have. But they're putting in lifts, and they're going to have an operation where they're building off-roaders in the area, which is kind of neat. They're kind of starting a business. They actually hired a guy full-time to work on their stuff. But check that out. I'm kind of updating myself on it right now. I'm just watching a little clip on the dude that's going to do a lot of the work, but it's interesting. The reason I'm bringing it all up is kind of just cool things that's going on in the Jeep world, that some famous people are buying some Jeeps and actually using them, or they're buying some off-roading buildings and off-roading businesses and doing some work on them. So interesting stuff. I watch a lot of YouTube because it's more entertaining than regular TV a lot of times. So I invite you guys to check that out. Today's podcast is going to be, the main meat of it is going to be about the breakdown of Trollhagen, the carnage at Trollhagen that we had. We started the day with five Jeeps, and as you'll hear, through the store, it didn't take long for us to lose one. And then kind of do some work to a few other ones that were a little unplanned. So you're gonna hear that in a little bit. I'm gonna have a couple of my friends on today, so just sit back, grab a cup of coffee or beverage of choice, or just keep driving, and you're gonna hear some fun stories. So for the first part here, I want to talk a bit about kind of the check-in process. It's been different every year when we go to Trollhagen. And this year we try to herd some cats because we have people come from all over. And trying to get everybody there at the same time is a little difficult. So first off, we had people coming in from different directions, and some people kind of take their time getting up in the morning. But everybody got there about 10 after 9, and then I kind of had to find where to pay, got to figure that out, then I had to find everybody else where to go. But the check-in process seemed to be like, they were pretty sticklers on everything. They're checking coolers, which is good for booze, and they want anybody booze on the trail. They were checking parts. They even found my Jeep. I had a little bit of trouble with the my rear axle seal and bearing. They told me about that, and I kind of knew about it. So today I ordered the parts I need for that, and I found a guy who was going to help me put it in. More on that later. Because you need a press to kind of get these on. So things like that. They kind of check your U-joints, ball joints, rear brakes, have the whole nine yards. They were kind of all over you. And that was all part of the check-ins, which is a little tougher than usual, or a little more stringent, you want to say. Then we finally got to the part where we got to meet up. We met up at the right at the trailhead. Everybody got checked through the line, make sure everything was good. And so we started with five Jeeps. Like I said before, we had five Jeeps, and it didn't take too long to go down to four. So I got the guy who was the first one to get bit by the bug. Thomas, welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
So we met up with Thomas and Courtney. He's been on here before. He's with Olix Adventures, the YouTube channel. So our plan was to have him just record everything and put together a cool video of our trip and everything, but I guess that first obstacle had a little challenge for us. We took the white trail because we saw like 40 people go on the blue trail, and we're like, you know what, we're gonna take the white trail. And we had our chaperone with us. I didn't catch her name, but basically have somebody follow you, make sure you get through everything and make sure you're fine. And she was cool. She was quiet. And after we started having problems, I went up to her and I said, I promise we do know what we're doing. It just doesn't look like it today. So, but with us, kind of the breakdown, we had Thomas and his LJ. We had three TJs, one of them being a Rubicon, and the other ones, two were opens. It was Brent and myself, and then we had a brand new Jeeper to the field. His name is Joe. He'll be on a little later on, hopefully. He had a JK Rubicon, first time off-roading, and he'll hear more about that later. He had to find their pedal on the right a lot more than he was used to, so I was giving him a hard time on that. But so that was kind of the lineup of the five Jeeps that we had rolling out. So the first obstacle was right on a corner. We're talking – were we 100 yards in? Not much. We weren't too far.
It was very short drive into the first obstacles.
I think I led, and I kind of crew. I had, you know, one little hiccup on the first obstacle, and I got over it. I think I rolled it back once and hit it a second time, and I was up and over. Wade followed. He had no problems. And then Brent, I think, went. And then it was you. It was your Jeep, but Courtney was driving. So walk us through what happened there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Courtney's a great driver, but it's been a little bit since we were out on the trail last. And the last time we were out was actually winter up at Trollhagen. So, in the winter with the snow, you're a little heavier on the accelerator to get a little more wheel speed, and you're not nearly as worried because most of the time your wheels are just spinning and not catching anything anyway. And, she got into the obstacle, and, she's got no fear, and she was just giving it a little bit too much gas. And it was just kind of we kind of looked back on it and on that obstacle, and, you know, there were some lines that looked pretty challenging, but I think just like trying to avoid going over like the main obstacle was almost worse for us. Around that side, just there was those two rocks that were just kind of out of place. Like you went around it pretty easily, but you had to really, really hug tight, right? Mm-hmm. And she just wasn't quite comfortable enough, and kind of got that front left hung up on the rock, and with the, she didn't have the locker engaged, so with the open, she just started spinning the tires, and it came down, and I thought I heard it. I wasn't quite sure, though. I thought she might have just actually ran into the root that was sticking out of the side, so maybe I thought that might have been just a little pop, because, you know, it wasn't like a big bang or anything like that. It was just a little noise that I was like, oh, that didn't sound quite right. But then, you know, she backed up and in the video drove right back over it, and it didn't, like, it wasn't making any other noises after, you know. So I was like, I don't think anything's wrong. I think, you know, whatever, but it must have just came down just right and popped that U-joint. So our first U-joint. But, you know, I kind of, we've been building on it now. So this is our first trip with the new front locker and gears. So we've been building on it a little bit. And I really wanted that to kind of be the failure point. So it was not that I wanted to break anything, but I'm glad that's where it broke. So, you know, it's to get a whole new axle shaft for that Dana 30, you know, brand new, $200. And that's nothing. That seems pretty reasonable. And the guys there showed me how to install it real quickly. So it should, once it's here, it should take, you know, not too long, 10 minutes or so, jack it up, put her in, and put it back down. So,
yeah, so
yeah, for sure.
So we got to the top of the hill, and so we got everybody up. I think you might have been third in line, actually. No, I'm thinking second or third. So we got all up.
We were second.
Second, okay.
Yeah, we were right after you. Yeah.
Okay, so we got all up the top of the hill, and we got everybody else up, and then you're standing there staring at your Jeep. I think it goes, yeah, I broke something. And we started looking around. We found it. And one of those funny things, I broke a U-joint of mine in that same side a long time ago, and I didn't change it forever. I took it so long to change it, it was just a ball of rust, basically, when I pulled it out. It was still working. Everything was working. Like, why is this squeak when I back up, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't even think to look. And then here is the U-joint. It was just trashed. I mean, we had three of the four there, but one of them was just a knuckle with rust.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, crazy.
So when I changed mine out, that's what it looked like. But
yep.
You're right. I think we talked a bit about it afterwards. If you want something to break, it's better than breaking inside the pumpkin or breaking the axle shaft. You kind of want that to be your weak point. And having a ball joint kit to change out you're gonna change the whole axle valve, is that right? You said?
Yeah. So it actually mangled up the ears pretty bad. So both shafts, the stub and the axle shaft itself are both bad, so we had to get a whole new assembly.
Okay, so then we're on a one-way trail. Luckily, we were like 100 yards from the beginning, and the chaperone called it in, and she goes, hold everybody up, we're gonna bring this guy out backwards. And so we said goodbye to you, because I was thinking, well, we could just help him out, see if we could fix it. But I'm like, there's no fixing. We gotta take this axle out somehow.
Yeah.
I was a little worried about you, because I was like, I couldn't get a phone call out even. In the trail, I couldn't get a phone call out. So, and I know you weren't by your radio, so I was just like, well, what are we going to do here? But we went, you went back. So kind of fill us in what happened when we went back.
Yeah, so, you know, it was, I was feeling like a real rookie, I'll tell you that, because I got down to the entrance to the trails, and I didn't have any of my tools with. And I was already like, you know, I was bummed we broke something. And then I'm like, man, now how am I going to get this thing home? I have none of my tools, and I don't know how I spaced it or just being so busy. Normally I have, you know, pretty much anything at least to get a tire off and, you know, jack it up, you know, most all this fluids, whatever, just in the vehicle ready. So I was like, holy crap, I don't know what I'm going to do. And there was a big bonfire, like where all the workers were hanging out. So I walked over there and asked them if there was any tools or anything that I could borrow, if they had anything. And they kind of looked at me like, oh, you dummy. And they said, well, there's a couple wrenches hanging on the wall in that shed right there. I'm like, okay, so this is going to be great.
What's funny, though, is like, back it up a little bit, Thomas runs his own business called Van Van. And you actually build like overland type of vans or customized
vans.
So you kind of know how to work on stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, I'm very handy. Like, that would have been no big deal to get the axle, you know, the axle, the broken side out and get it home. But I had no tools to do that. I'm like, holy cow, what was I thinking? I'm out wheeling and I have no tools. Like, that's just like an unwritten rule. There's a kit in the back always to at least, you know, get you somewhere. So, and it's, I don't know what I was thinking. I just got too comfortable. I hadn't had any breakage since last Mesabi Mountain Trail. That's the last thing I broke. And
Well, you know, if you bring all your tools with, you're not going to break. And that was,
yeah, exactly.
Because I packed, I'm like, I don't think I need my big old high lift jack. And I'm like, I better pack it because then I won't need it. And more on that later. We needed it. Yeah. Lucky I had it.
Yep.
But go back. And so these, you were starting to, you know, look at your Jeep, but with the tools that you're going to borrow, and you're like, well, maybe I can get this home.
Yeah. So so what they gave, you know, they're like, well, okay, here's some open end wrenches. You know, I'm like, okay, maybe I can get this figured out with these. And then I went to get my tire off, and I have the stupid 5-spline lug nuts, and I didn't even have the 5-spline tool. And, you know, I just asked the random people around the fire, and none of them really were like super ambitious to help yet, you know, and they were, you know, they're like, nah, we don't really have anything. I'm like, oh crap. I'm like, okay, well, you guys just look at this and tell me if you drive home. I just got to drive like 30 minutes south. Just at least to get it to somewhere that I know there's some tools. And they looked at it. They're like, yeah, it'll just clearance itself. I'm like, all right, so we're just driving it. I'm going to drive it. Well, I was like parked in, so I had to go in reverse. And I went to go in reverse, and it was like, the ears were bent just like so much that I could go forward. But when I put it in reverse and went in reverse, it would lock that tire up and completely stop me dead. And I couldn't reverse out of the spot I was parked in. So I'm like, I can't even reverse, and I don't want to like give it and like drag the wheel or break some more stuff. You know, I just had the internals done on the front, and I was like, I just really don't want to break. I had all new seals, all new bearings, all that stuff. I'm like, this is not something I want to pay because I'm dumb and I'm driving this thing. So they saw me, and they're like, they finally see like the stress I'm feeling. And then all of a sudden it was just like a miracle. All of a sudden I had 3 splined lug tools in my hand. I had, you know, a 1/2-inch impact driver. I had a jack. I had a whole like 3-stack Milwaukee toolbox just loaded full of tools. All these guys all of a sudden were just like, all right, he's stressed out enough, we're gonna help him out. And I couldn't even believe it. All of a sudden, 10 minutes later, you know, we got the axle shaft out, the tire's back on, it's back on the ground. And I literally, all I had to do was jack it up. They did it all for me. Like it's just like kind of a sentiment to the Jeep community. You know, they all of a sudden were just like there for me, didn't know me from anyone else there, you know, and they decided that, you know, they were going to help me and help me get it home. And I was, you know, pretty forever grateful of that, because I was really starting to get stressed out. And, you know, it was Memorial Day. I'm like, I'm going to have this thing towed, or what the heck am I going to do? And I could only imagine how much that would be on a, you know, a holiday weekend, you know? So I was super thankful that they all just, it was pretty crazy. They all, you know, just all started banding together and getting all those tools. And then they did it for me. They didn't even make me do it. Like, they were just like super happy to wrench on my Jeep for me. I'm like, all right, sounds real good. And you know, I asked them how I could repay them, and they didn't want anything. They just said, you know what, just keep coming back and, you know, paying the entry. If you want to go one step further, maybe join the club, you know, and come up and help us, you know, to get these events ready or whatever. So
that was the Minnesota Gold Four Wheelers, right? The host.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
So those guys, I think they were kind of just teasing you a little bit. They're going to help you no matter what.
I think they absolutely were. They were just kind of, you know, letting it simmer a little, letting me feel like a rookie for a little while, and making me understand my mistakes so I don't do that again. They were definitely teaching me, for sure.
Well, I think I was on the hill. That's what I told the guy. I'm like, we do know what we're doing. We just do not look like it at all right now. Because a couple of people didn't know what they're doing. Let's put it that way. But by the end of the day, they felt better about it. But yeah, we had more trouble than just that. I think I got on the phone with you yesterday and told y'all about the rest of our stuff that everybody else is going to hear about. But I'm glad you got home and got the part ordered. Sounds like part ordered and just waiting on it.
Yep. I actually ordered two. I ordered just brand new axle shafts for the right side and the left side. So driver and passenger front axle, just so I have new ones in there. I'm going to take the one good one out, have that as a spare, just full assembly, you know, probably replace the U-joint in that one, just make sure it's good. And I just went standard axles because I want it, you know, I want it to be either the shaft or the U-joint that breaks, not the ring and pinion or the locker or any of that kind of stuff. So I hemmed and hawed and almost ordered the chrome ollie shafts. And I'm just like, you know what? I don't even want to deal with that. I like it how it is. I don't see myself, you know, wheeling super hard. Obviously we broke this, but I kind of blame that on the sand. This is our first, real, like, you know, we haven't really wheeled in sand that much. It was very sandy there.
I think so, it was just time for that one to break.
Yeah.
Cause it wasn't really there that if, I thought you were locked up. I thought she had it locked up for some reason, but here she was open. So I think this hit that one wheel that was spinning, and we found the weak point. It was right
there. Yes. Yes, and it was.
Knowing that I have a very similar Jeep to yours in terms of the front end and the have an ear tab, I think that was bent at one time. We bent the back. That makes it weaker. I might have to just have on hand that those actual shafts. And I think I was going to go with the chrome ollie rod. I was going to actually do that, but it makes sense to kind of like, okay, you want the weak point to be something that's easily replaceable.
Yes.
Into the pumpkin where you have to change all the fluids again, all that jazz, or change a ring opinion. I think I might stick with the standard axle shafts and just not be an idiot with the right pedal when you don't need
it. It is. It's, I think that's the biggest thing, you know, and they just, like everyone says, you know, it's par for the course. If you're out wheeling, you're going to end up breaking something anyway. And, you know, it's a good lesson for us. And, you know, it really taught Courtney a lot actually driving. She knew exactly, you know, what she did wrong. And she, you know, she's looking forward to getting back out there and redeeming herself. So,
yeah, looking back, one thing I like to do is, like, I like to make it look easy, like being first gear and just kind of just walk up the hill as much as I can and just kind of drive stuff. It's fun just to kind of keep this barely moving because you know you're not stressing your vehicle if you're not, you know, 5,000 RPMs. If you're just kind of putting along and just letting it kind of find the way, you know, especially if there's a rock. If it's just all sand, you can put the pedal down, you know, because that's sand. But if there's a hard surface somewhere, you're prepared to grab on it or you're going to hit it hard, or if it's a ledge, you're going to hit. And riding ATVs all the years before I started in mountain bikes and all that stuff, you can make it look more fun it is because, I don't know, I just like doing it that way. And did a lot of that, especially after you broke. I'm like, God, I hope we don't break anything else. But then you know, we started at 5 Jeeps. We were down to 4 real fast, and one of them I just had some damage. Yours had a little bit of damage. So off that first obstacle, I'm like, we know what we're doing. I kept on telling the chaperone, we do know what we're doing. It just doesn't work right now.
You know, I was thinking back, just looking at that obstacle, that actually with the LJ, the wheelbase actually kind of hindered it a little bit because you guys could get around that first rock and get your vehicle in there. Or where we were, I had the front left and the front or the rear left all planted on those rocks at the same time.
Oh, you poor LJ. You poor LJ.
Yeah, I know. I know. So it was a little, you know, that was one time it was just a little too long for that obstacle. And, it, you know, she bumped that left wheel right up to the tire. And when it was open, you know, that one stuck. So that other one just started spinning like crazy. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, it came down and snapped.
Yeah, I heard it pop. I'm like, okay, you can just – I always think that somebody breaks something. Like Wade will be going, I'll hear his pop. I'm like, oh, he broke something. And nothing. He just keeps going. I thought for sure he broke an axle, a couple, like at Apple Valley Farms or Apple Valley one time. I forget where it was, out west. And he hit something real hard. I'm like, oh, he broke an axle for sure. And then, nope.
Yeah.
He's going. I'm like, well, it sounds like he broke something. But
he
doesn't. This time when you when Courtney went, I'm like, sounded something like it broken, but what do I know? Maybe it's just sand in the drum or sand.
Yeah.
Because sand gets everywhere. It makes all those popping noises every now and again, but
yeah, figure out for what sure. It
so,
no, that was definitely not it. So, but yeah, we're, just waiting on some parts and we'll get her back together and get back out there.
That's, well, you still have the other Jeep though, too, don't you?
We sure do. We sure do. That one, you know, we haven't really taken that one out yet. I'm not really sure when the inaugural trip on that one's going to be, but I don't know, maybe a Gilbert run or something to get it out, test it out.
That one has a diesel in it, or is it the 2-turbo? I can't remember which one.
Two turbo. Yeah, 2-liter turbo.
Well, cool. Well, hopefully break that one anytime soon. But
I sure hope not.
Well, that's story number one, folks. We're going to have a couple more stories on here you hear, but that's story number one. I'm anxious to get back out there with you, Thomas, and Courtney next time.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll get out there soon, but thanks for being on today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Have a great rest of the day.
You too. Bye.
All right. See you. Bye.
I never curse on these.
We're live here. And Wade just said he is not going to curse. We are live in the toy box somewhere east west of the Twin Cities. I'm not going to tell you where because everybody will show up and want free shit done to their vehicles. We're also a couple drinks in.
Location.
But we're going to break down the Trollhagen carnage that happened. And this is part, well, two or three. Depends on where I get Joe in on this thing. Okay. If I get him on.
Yep.
Or if I just kind of give a summary on it.
We left a lot of blood on the trail.
Yeah.
Everybody did.
Yeah. Everybody. Well, besides Brent, which is really ironic because.
Yep.
The ironic thing is the guy who goes all out all the time, zero problems.
Unscathed.
Cat out of the bag.
Yep.
So we started with five Jeeps. As you know, I've had Thomas on already. We started with five Jeeps. Pretty quick, we got down to four. Real fast. And then not too long later, more like 5 minutes later, Joe had a little issue. We're going to talk about him in a bit. But later on the trail, we had the most mysterious off-road issue I've ever seen.
The Illuminati attacked my Jeep.
I'm blaming sure. Aliens.
Aliens?
I said aliens already. Yep. This is totally an alien invasion.
Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
I don't know how this happened. But I didn't get to the hole. I saw the hole and says, well, there's no way anybody's going to get out of that without getting pulled out. So why go into it?
Yeah.
It was a deep sand. It was a sandy mud. Would you call it a sandy mud? It wasn't really mud in the bottom.
You know, Trollhagen's got all those, I just call them, whoops. Yeah. Those little high-low spots. And some of them are totally fine. And others are mud holes. And we actually, Brent drove a little bit past it, but stopped next to it like he was sizing it up.
Yeah, I was before him. I was in the lead, yeah.
And I was like, what's it look like? He's like, I don't know, man. It looks pretty muddy to me. And I looked at it, and I thought it looked like sand at the bottom. I thought it was fine. So I didn't listen to Brent because I thought it was fine. It just looked bad but really wasn't. It was. Because as soon as I got down in there, I sunk up, I don't know, up to near my doors.
You weren't getting probably. Anywhere.
Nope, I did not.
Did we winch you out? I can't remember how we got
yeah,
there.
I winched out. I had to winch
oh,
out.
Oh, you winched out, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, just trying to, you know, rock back and forth. Because I was able to kind of, it was one of the whoop-de-doos that doesn't just go down and come right back up. It had like a little bit of a flat spot before you'd come out of it. And so I was trying to go forward and backward and get a little momentum and try to get myself out. It didn't. I mean, I was able to move back and forth, but as soon as I'd come up on the uphill to climb out, I wasn't going anywhere.
Because you're going 0.2 miles an hour. It's like if you had a little bit of momentum, you probably got out. The guys in 40s probably had no problem getting out of it, maybe. But
yeah, my little 33s didn't stand a chance, unfortunately.
So you're in there for a few minutes, and then. And then we heard this big, you know, air releasing out of the tire, which we always think, because one of us always, or one or multiple of us, always pulls the tire off the beat. It's like, it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounded like.
Either we go to discount tire,
yep.
Because that's why we go to discount tires, because you get to clean it up for free. It's like, hey, they'll re-put it on there, they'll clean it up for you, no problem. I usually get, like, wood stuck in my rim. That's what mine is. Because like the next day I'll come back. We hit a tree or something. Yep. Next day I'll come back. My tire's flat. I'm like, okay, what's going on? I'll look around. There's a little bit of, you know, tree stuck in my damn rim. So the bead can't really hit. And so like, I'll go to discount tire. And 10 minutes later, they get it cleaned up and you're ready to go. Either that or the guy right behind you, some other dude, wasn't with our party. He was just like, yeah, as long as you broke off a valve stem. He's like, we got more of those. We can fix that, no problem.
Yep.
And like he brought bell stems with.
Because I tore one off once.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah. And then, oh, okay, we should have those in our spare kit.
Yeah, so that was, so exactly, I'm like going like, yeah, ripped it off. We had to hit something, ripped off the valve stem, or broke the bead. Because that's, both those things came up.
Yeah, it sounded exactly like I popped a bead.
So air released in 0.2 seconds. Yeah.
Yep.
So like that's what happened. So then we pull up his 8274, throw around a tree, yank you out of the tree, out of the hole, and then we throw an air compressor on it.
Well, I was looking as I was like putting my air compressor on. I'm like looking at the bead because we almost always, when we blow a bead, we almost always blow the outer bead, not the inner bead. And it's like, huh, it actually doesn't look like the bead's off, because I started tugging on the tire once you jacked it up with the high lift.
Oh, yeah, back up a little bit. I brought the high lift with at the last. Here's the things I brought the last second. Last second, I'm going like, if I bring the high lift, I will not need to use it.
And you didn't. I did.
And I also said, if I bring my big old hunting boots, my big rubber boots that go up to the knees, I will not need these. If I bring them with, but if I don't bring them with, guess what's going to happen?
Yep.
We're going to need this, and I'm going to get an earful from Wade.
That's
or
good
somebody.
Gear.
Why did you bring that damn thing with?
So naturally, if you drop if a tire goes low or whatever, you want to get the pressure off so you can get air into it, especially if you drop
yep.
a bead.
Yeah, you never get you the bead
get
back air,
on. You want to get that off. And so we tried the, well, it was Wade's old jack, which Brent now owns.
Yeah,
and he brought that with.
Sunk into the mud.
It just sunk down. It's like, you know, unstrapped the high lift off the high lift mounts that we had in and pulled it out and all excited to use this thing. So I was getting ready a tutorial, like keep your head out of the way of this jack handle because it'll smack in your face a few times if you don't do it right. So anyhow, got it up. I was pretty proud I brought it, to be honest with you. Actually, this is like the 15th time I brought it with an off-road trip. And the first time I was like, because I have like the zip ties to hold it tight so it doesn't make noise in the back.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time I ever had to like pull the zip ties off. I was like, oh, shit. And I still have like the 15 zip ties in the back that are, you know, always bring your zip ties home.
You don't have like the little rubber.
I do have the isolator on it, but it still rattles.
It still rattles.
Around.
Oh, okay.
So I have the zip ties
I don't have
on.
Any of that from. I have one too, and I didn't bring it.
Yeah. Well, because I brought mine, because you're always.
As long as somebody brings one.
Yeah. Anyhow, so we had that all going. So back to your part. What did you see?
Oh, so after you got it up in the air, I hooked up the air compressor and I just turned it on and started kind of tugging on the tire. And then I realized it doesn't look like the bead's off. And as I'm like looking around the outside of the tire, trying to look for the bead, I could see right through, you know, one of the openings in my mag
spokes.
Wheels. Yeah. And the inside of the aluminum, of the rim, there's a hole in it. I mean, it's like the size of
dollar.
A silver dollar, a big hole on the inside of my rim in the aluminum itself. It's like, okay. I mean, when I saw it, I didn't even first, like, I thought it was a clump of dirt. Like, you know, how do you get a hole in the inside of your rim?
Yeah.
It was super strange. But I remember right before we heard the pressure release when I was down in the mud, and we already said we were going to winch, and I was like, well, I'll give it like one more try. The of course, one more. I heard this like clunk, clunk, clunk. And I just assumed, yeah, there's a rock or a log down in there.
Or an alien.
Or an alien. And I got a little bit more, you know, into it after we got the wheel off. And I actually just the other night, sort of a sidebar, but I took the wheel off to just inspect my rear brakes so I could kind of see. And I also looked to see if there were any other damage in there. And you can see where the whatever was lodged in there, where it hit the brake caliper. And that's where it must have.
So what we're thinking is that there's a rock that was just kind of in that area in the mud, and it got lodged in just perfectly
inside the aluminum of the rim.
Yeah, because I'll post this with my Instagram and Facebook because I took a picture of when I dropped it off at your house.
Yeah.
And it just got in there just perfect and just poked, just straight up punched a hole right into there.
Yep.
Basically, you're an idiot. Let's just go ahead and tell
Bow.
You.
You can see right on the brake caliper where it hit the brake caliper, and it must have, as the wheel's spinning around the outside of the brake, because the brake caliper doesn't move, it must have caught the caliper, and it had to have been a rock, right? And then, you know, cocked funny as the rim's spinning.
Yeah.
And it wedged in there, and it just punched a
but
hole.
If you're listening right now and this ever happened to you, I want to know about it because this is the first time I have ever thought of this. But
never
honest,
heard of that.
Looking at your rim, that rim, I don't know if it's always been in the passenger side or what, because passenger side of the vehicles always get beat up more on the driver's side because people see the driver's side.
You can see what's going on the left.
But that rim was pretty beat up anyhow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's had a hard life.
Yeah, so I'm looking at that rim. Well, if there's any rim to get beat up and, you know, pull out of the rotation, it's that one.
Yeah, there's a percentage of aluminum off of all my rims up in Gilbert. for sure from all those rocks.
So as we're pulling us off, we realize that as Wade pulls out his phone and Googles, like, can I put a 32-inch tire with the three different 33s?
Sketchy.
It was sketchy. And Brent has a 30-inch spare on his, with the FYI. Yeah. So this is...
Because my spare is still the size of my old tires that I had before I went to 33s. Yeah, so I didn't buy all five.
So I'm the only person that has a TJ rim with a spare that fits, and I've never... The little white strip was still on there.
The spare 33.
So Wade was always like, we can patch anything. We can patch anything. I got spare. I got spare. Blah, 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 blah,
can't
blah, blah, blah.
Can't patch aluminum. Not that hole.
Get some duct tape out. See if it works.
I did have some quick steel, but I don't know that I would have tried to quick steel that hole in that rim. That would have been, in hindsight, that we should have kept the rim just to see if we could have done it just for giggles. But
so we came to the conclusion that my spare was going to be the one that was going to get us home. And so we pulled that off. And so I put his Milestar Pat broken old ass rim on my vehicle.
Help.
And your vehicle never looked better with my KO2 on it.
I don't know, I thought that looked a little skinny.
But so we did a little switch, and I'm at his house right now and got my spare back tonight. But the KO2 brought him home with the full size spare. So are you a full size spare believer now?
Yeah, the challenge was I used to have a spare rim that just had the wrong size tire on it. Now, since I broke a rim, I don't have a spare tire or a spare wheel, so now I need both. So I blasted a note out to the Jeep community to see if anybody's got a set of Rubicon, factory Moab rims, the factory 16x8s. Somebody'll have one sitting behind their garage, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then, yes, I will go get a proper 33. Or if anybody really wants to check me, it's technically not a 33. It's a 285/75/16.
All the metric
guys.
Which
is like a 32.8.
Well, yeah. Are any of these actually 33 inches? I think they actually measure them on different, like, comparison videos every now and again.
Yeah, I have no idea.
But I thought it was really interesting because to have this whole Carnage thing on, because this one was the most interesting damage I think we had.
Yeah.
And you'll hear a little later on this podcast about my issue that I had coming up. You'll hear it right at the end that I had, which I fixed. I just took the problem out. I took the length of hose that I popped.
Uh-huh.
I just took it out, and now I have my adapter.
Right there.
Right there. I started thinking, why have the whole hose thing? If I'm going to have the hood up anyhow and release the heat, I'll just...
Oh, yeah, then you don't really need the remote. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so I fixed mine already for free. Instead of replacing something for $15, I just took the problem away.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I thought this was the most interesting trail damage ever. And some of you will probably listen to this and be like, oh, I had that 15 times. But I'm just like, I don't enjoy mud. Wade probably loves mud, but I don't enjoy mud.
I'm not a mud guy.
I did mud enough when I was...
Mike's the mud guy.
Mike likes to park in the middle of a water hole.
I like the rocks. Mike likes the mud.
Yeah. But, so I thought that was really interesting, the way it happened, and just to prove that having a full-size spare is probably a good idea. Probably a good idea.
Yeah, I learned my lesson. I've always had a full-size spare until I got this set of tires.
Let's talk about the guys with the JKs who don't bring a spare with at all. Because they're like, I'll just bring plugs and stuff. Then they do that spare delete kit they put on. I don't know if you've ever seen those. Mm-hmm. A lot of JKs don't run spares at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a dilemma there. But I'm going like, wow, if you really wreck a rim, if you rash out a rim, you're really stuck.
Well, that was kind of my logic, frankly, is, I figured I'll find a used 285/75 somewhere from somebody, and then I'll slap it on, right? But I really didn't make it a priority to find it. To be honest, I kind of forgot. And I wasn't that motivated to do it anyway, because I figured, well, if I blow a tire, I mean, I bring plenty of plugs and rubber cement and the whole kit and the whole deal. I never really once thought about blowing a whole rim.
But now we know that my rims fit on your vehicle.
And
We know that works. If you drove all the way home, got it all fixed. Yeah. And if my brother's with, he also has a 33, and he runs a full-size spare. Yeah. It's that the other two guys that have Yep. I think Doug, I think my brother-in-law Doug, he runs a 30-inch spare also. He didn't get the full size either.
So did he?
So I think I referenced it last night.
So it's just you and Mike.
Here. Yeah, as long as you have one of us
the saviors.
And we don't have two problems on the trail.
Usually we only have one guy that has like a big mechanical and, you know, to the point of your podcast, there was a lot more carnage this time.
It was, yeah.
Trollhagen wanted its pound of flesh.
Exactly. And we try to we pride ourselves. Our Jeep club is, you know, I think I talked about this on the podcast. We go 33s, and if you want to get lockers, go get them. But, Brent was like, I don't want lockers because it's just more things that go wrong. I'm like, well, I already have mine. They're just on the shelf. It's going to happen. But we kind of go to that level. And the reason why is if you put 40s on all of a sudden, everything gets easy.
I think Brent's logic is lockers takes the fun out of it. It's like, well, momentum is his ally. He's like, I don't want lockers because then I'll just lock up and crawl something, and that's not Brent's MO. He's fifth gear.
Yeah,
I don't need lockers. I have momentum.
He got just well. I didn't mention this before, but when I had trouble with this one hole. See, this is something I forgot to mention before. So there's one thing we went on, and I'm like, I'm in the lead, and you kind of egg each other on, and Wade and Brent are like, let's give it a try. Can you go ahead and do it? So then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do this thing. So I get down in this hole. I'm coming out. I'm like, well, I'm gonna climb out this hole. I didn't think I'd get out of this hole at least. And I get out of this hole, but the driver rear went into a hole, a deeper hole, and the passenger wheel found a log. Mm-hmm. And the guys who were on the driver's side of my vehicle saw the passenger front wheel in full profile, mm-hmm. and my door was about a half inch from the ground. I was ready to go over. I threw it in reverse and flopped it back down.
That was that pit that was before the hill.
That pit before the hill.
Yeah. All right, yep.
And then I tried it the other way, and then the other wheel did the exact opposite thing. So then my son was with me, my Bigfoot, Mason was with me, the future NBA kid. And he was like, Dad, I was like right on top of you. He was like almost, he was literally laying on top of me.
You had her twisted up.
And then so I'm like, I backed out of it. And I said, I am no longer brave enough to do this hole. So I got out of it. Then Brent pretty much did the same thing. And then we threw a whole bunch of lumber inside that hole, and you got past that part.
Yep. Well, but I cheated, though. Well, we threw a bunch of broken logs and stuff in there to try to make that hole not so deep. And Brent kind of got in it sideways and tried to climb out at an angle. And that looked like the hot setup to me. And it ended up working for me.
Were you locked up for that hole, though, too?
I'm pretty sure. I don't remember, but I'm sure I was.
Well, then you got 10 feet further and then got hung up on a log for that 40s we're getting over.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way we're going to get out of this without winching over these things. But it was fun. I mean, that's the fun about having our Jeep club. We talked about this years ago when we first got in. It was like, well, if you go to a 35 or 37, then there's a whole bunch more money you got to spend on it. Then everything is easy. And Chad from Zeus, he said that too. He goes, yeah, if you go big, everything's just easy. They have to find crazy stuff to go on to make it challenging, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. Especially if you think about a lot of places that we wheel around the Twin Cities, or that are within driving distance of the Twin Cities, if you go too big, there's really nothing that's going to be that hard.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure, there's some things that we have to drive past. You know, some of those big log step-ups where they're dug out.
We drove past a lot, and Wade likes to tease me. He calls me bypass a lot. But I did take a picture of you. You were in the lead, and it was a bypass sign that you drove by. So
I noticed you sent that to the group. Yeah, I was like, okay, I get the joke.
It was we go on this Memorial Day run, which Minnesota Gopher Leaders host. We go on Monday because as we're driving, we see people leaving. So they've been going at it since
Thursday or Friday.
We like to go on Monday because we have other things going on in our world. And as we go on Monday. And there's just not as many people. There's a lot of people around, but not nearly as many.
That was really lean.
The bad side of that is everything is just dug out to the teeth. I mean, it's dug out. But one place that wasn't dug out, do you remember? That we just made look easy. Was the Noid. The Noid is usually just a trap.
Did we do the Noid?
We cruised right up it.
Wasn't that March when we did the Noid?
We did it in March where you broke your front end again. But we did it this time, and we walked right up it. I was in the lead, and we looked at it. I'm like, this isn't so bad. And I moved one huge rock that was probably a 500-pound rock that I moved out of the way. and I got that out of the way. Then
yeah,
I coasted up the whole thing and I did the rock garden. You guys went around that rock garden at the top.
I just missed the sign. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And we cruised right up it and we stopped for a hot second. Well, everybody's up here. Let's keep going. Yeah, that one was ridiculously easy compared to what it was in the past, and everything else looked harder. Yeah. It's just, you know, it just changed, like
it's never the same, right?
Never the same.
When you go in the winter, and it's snowy and slippery, and then you go in the fall or the Memorial Day, then there's always, you know, better traction, but it was really wet this time. I mean, I think what they said, the red trail was
underwater.
We did really wet.
White, then blue.
And we didn't do red at all.
Because blue, I saw like 40 rigs go on. I'm like, we are going white.
And it's funny. You go to places sometimes and the traction's just like incredible. You can just crawl everything because the traction's so good. And other times you can't. You got to use more momentum. Or when it's snowy, right? You always got to use momentum because there's never, you know, wet, snowy logs. But
one thing I think I talk about later in this podcast, because you're hearing this out of order, I got to do something that I always wanted to do. It was the last thing. Only you and I did the last piece. Where you went up and then I followed your trails and I got on these two rocks and I started burning rubber.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of wish I would have...
Warm it up.
I kind of wish I would have been like, Wade, why don't you record this part while I'm just barking the tires? And
yeah, we should have, actually. It would have been a good little like slow-mo video or something. Warming the tires up against the rock and then, you know, they got nice and sticky and... the little bump right over it.
Because I watched the guys
at
Moab doing that, where they just sit in one spot and they're all four wheels, or a couple of them just burning it up and they're just going back and forth like this, and they kind of crawl up.
Yep.
I was like, I always wanted to do this. Because a Jeep doing a burnout is kind of a contradiction of terms. Because 190 screaming eagles under the hood is really not going to get a burnout.
The physics just doesn't work.
Unless you have now with the new Hemi Wranglers, you know, rocking. But this was just sitting just the right angle. The two inside tires are off the air, in the air a little bit, and it was barking. It was fun.
Yeah,
that was
that last little hill we did was actually really good. It was a fun little technical run.
Well, it was just you and I. Know the other two guys just hit the bricks, but it was the end of the trail. I don't know if they knew it or Brent knew it.
They just turned right and it spits you out. We turned left and it's just one more. Obstacle and then spits you out.
One more to break something.
Yep, one more opportunity to break something, like blow a hole in your rim.
But we did. We got through it, and
that was good.
But overall, you know, special thank you to the Minnesota Go Four Wheelers group again. It was a great trail.
Yep,
fun weekend. I know the volunteers that came with us. The one gal, I don't know what your name was.
Yeah.
We do know what we're doing. Yep. It just doesn't look like it today. I told her a few times that she kind of caught up to us, was hanging out with us. Like, we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
We just really don't look like it.
They do a nice job, man. They run a really, they did a nice job. Tech inspection and check-in. And then
as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, they were all over it this year. More so than I've seen in the past. But maybe it was Memorial Day. They know there's a big one, so they're a little more deal
on
it.
They do a good job to keep everybody kind of safe and in line. And,
obviously,
really well
we like to follow the rules. And usually we have more tools with us. But we did not have the right tools to patch a rim this time around. Yeah. That's the moral of the story is... Moral of the story is, like, full-size spares is probably a good idea.
I'm calling the tire shop and see if they haven't junked my rim yet. And we can get it back, and we're going to try to quick steal it and see if we
can. You can probably melt it down for a Captain America shield if you want to.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, thanks again, Wade, for being on this. Here's a funny thing about doing this with Wade is he's all about making content, but he hates recording. He's like, whoa, we're drinking beer, we're hitting on the deck. Why do we have to stop and do this thing? And then he gets into it. So, but thanks, Wade, for being on. We'll talk to you soon.
I'm back here now on Crossroad Off-Road Podcast talking to my friend Joe here, who it was his first time off-roading. And it was interesting. So, backstory a little bit. So, we have three TJs, an LJ, and then Joe has a four-door JK. Rubicon. So he bought the right type of Jeep, but it was stock. So welcome to the podcast, Joe. Tell us a bit about Jeep first off. Let's start with that. Let's start talking about Jeep first.
Well, thanks, Mitch. Obviously awesome to be here. We had a awesome day out at Trollhagen and plenty of stories to get to, but yeah, I'm a kind of a brand new Jeep guy, obviously, as you know, but had been looking for Jeeps for quite a while, and finally pulled the trigger. And as you said, got a stock Ruby JK Unlimited, and absolutely love the thing. Beyond that, personally, you know, here in Minneapolis, wife, two kids, and the two kids, by the way, they could not stop talking about the Jeeping after we got done for days. They had so much fun doing it. It was wild. So
bounce around.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
We threw them around. Yeah. I brought my 13-year-old boy with, he's a giant, but he slept almost all the way home. He couldn't figure out how to put the seat down on the TJ. Yeah. He just slept like this. Upright. He was like a zombie. He was just out cold all the way home.
Oh my God. What a good time.
But what year is the Jeep again?
So I ended up buying, and I had been looking for a while, I ended up buying a 2014 JK Unlimited, so the four-door, and Rubicon. And bought it, not sight unseen, I test drove it once, but I had been looking forever. And I wanted, originally when I was going to buy a Wrangler, I was going to buy a Sahara. But I ended up finding a Rubicon that ended up having kind of the nicer interior package. So leather, nav, heated seats, heated mirrors, you know, it had kind of some of the nicer upgrades because this is my daily driver. I don't have another car. So this thing's kind of has to serve two purposes. One, obviously go off-roading, beat the hell out of it. Two, just get me places, get me from A to B. And so I kind of wanted best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And so when this Rubicon came along, I was like, oh, it's perfect. That's exactly what I wanted. But as you said, it's very much stock. It is stock rims, stock tires, no lift yet. Doesn't even have the leveling kit on it. So it still looks kind of goofy. I've loved it. It's been great.
Yeah. So when JKs come from the factory, they have a little bit of a rake to them.
Yeah.
The back end's up. And that's ironically, it's for fuel mileage, I heard.
Yes.
And in the end, it's a lot of people put a little leveling kit on. You can get 33s just out of the box with a couple $100 leveling kit on them. That's what my brother did on his JK. That's why he recently sold it. His wife's Jeep, actually. But so you did put on some sliders, right? You put on some step sliders?
I did. So, all right. So I've done a little bit of work. So when I bought it, it was running great, but it was still a little rough in spots. So yeah, the original factory Rubicon sliders, when I bought it, were rusting. You know, they had quite a bit of rust on them. And so I ended up buying new sliders that I installed myself, which piece of cake to put on. It took me a couple hours. I mean, it's like 6 bolts. It was actually harder to get the stock ones off than the.
How long it takes? Yeah. I'm like 6 bolts. It should take you 4 minutes, but if it's rusty, it's a whole nother ball game.
That's exactly right. It actually took me at least half the time just to get the old ones off, the factories off. So I did that. Changed the sliders. As I think the meme you sent me, every JK owner immediately puts on new headlights. So of course I did that. And
the light bar I sent you.
Oh, the light bar. I've not done the light bar yet.
I'm anti-light bar.
I think I am too.
There's a few things I don't like is light bars and Angry Bird grills.
Yeah.
I think that's it's pick your own project if you like have at it. But just get a good set of headlights and you're fine. I've field dressed a deer with a pen light.
Yes.
So I've
yes.
done things in dark with a sharp tool in my hand.
Yeah.
But in the end, I just don't understand. They are just whistling nightmares if they get those light bars.
Yep.
But a good set of headlights are important to have. Stock TJ, stock JK, so a lot of stock headlights are basically a candle in the wind.
That's right.
So I think my headlights, I think, did Wade find them too? He might have found them also. They're about $80. They're not bad. You can spend $400 if you want, but I'm going to spend the cheap ones all day because if one goes out, I'm buying another one, the cheap one. So
that's right. I think mine.
That's right. I think you had the. I think you texted me that you got a Jeep, and then like 8 minutes later, you had the headlights on sitting on the shelf. I was like, wow, they're ready to go.
Yep.
So it's hilarious. So we did a couple things. So we're going to fast forward a little bit. We had these Jeeps. I talked about this already with Thomas been on, and you hear a little more of Wade. We started the day with 5 Jeeps that were fully functioning Jeeps.
Yeah.
And within well, 15 minutes of hitting the trail, not even 50. It was like 4 minutes. We hit on the four. Yeah. News is still going, though. Good news is you're still going. And we made this mistake. Here's what we're going to do different. We should have had the guy with the least amount of experience go second.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're going to do from now on, is say the guy with the least amount of experience go second or third, not last. That was our mistake. So a little bit is on us because we had you at the disadvantaged position, because it should have been like, okay, this guy can go next. But I think I always end up in a stupid lead. I do that probably on purpose because I'm impatient. I want to get going.
Right.
But, so I went up the hill, cruised right up it.
Yep.
And I think it was actually, I think Olex went second. So they had their problem second. And then it was you. No, you went last. You went last.
I went last.
Yeah. Cause we got you at the same position. We already, you don't know this, but I already talked to Thomas about his issue. And ironically, Wade, who's after this one, we're out of order, but it's fine. So Thomas went, had his issue. We didn't even know he had his big breakdown yet. We did not know that. And you're going to hear about it when you listen back to this. You're going to hear about the whole story. And he actually has a YouTube video coming out too. But he all went, and it's the same exact spot. Wade climbed the wall. He, like, climbed the wall. Damn near rolled it, I thought. But then you went up. So tell us your experience and your first time. First off, how scared – were you scared at all? Were you like, I'm going to do this. I don't care. We're going to have some fun today. What was your feeling on it?
A little bit of a mixed bag. Like, I was all in on doing it. But, again, I had just spent a decent amount of money on this JK. It's my daily driver. And the only goal I really had going into the day was, I want to make sure I'm driving home. Like, that's all. Basically, if I'm driving home, I'm good with it.
That's me. I'm like, as long as I get home.
As long as I get home, I don't have to get towed. You know, we don't have to call the wrecker to get us out off the trail. I'm good. So it was a bit of caution and a whole ton of excitement. I mean, it's like kids playing in a sandbox, only it's adults with really expensive toys.
Yeah.
But it's a blast. and so, yeah, so that was kind of my thought going in, right? Like, super excited to go beat the hell out of the Wrangler. That's why I bought it. But also not wanting to destroy the thing on day one.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a mix of caution and excitement. You know, I think the biggest thing I learned, and it took a little bit, but I caught on fairly well, which was how aggressive to drive. You know, that first hill, when you zipped up it, Wade went up it. I think Brent was in front of me and I was following Brent, and he got up it, I think, without any problem. But what I didn't understand, especially in four low, you know, you've got the sway bar disconnected. Yeah. Like, I just was driving timid, you know. It's like, how hard do I hit this thing into this tree or this rock, right? Like, of course, and as you know, we can talk about this, my JK Unlimited has a longer wheelbase. So I was high. I was, you know, getting stuck going over peaks more often. And that's just because I wasn't driving it hard enough. I was driving timid. And as soon as I kind of figured that out, the day got a lot better.
So I'll paint the picture for the crowd who is listening. So it was a tight slide going up the hill to the right. And what I think the mistake was, not the mistake, but the thing you're going to learn is how wide the vehicle is.
Yes.
After a while of driving something, you kind of go like, okay, 4.5 feet over there is my end of my vehicle, but 4.5 feet and 1 inch is a tree.
Right.
And you were like, bam, right into that tree. And that's where the first fender.
Yeah, we'll get to the second fender.
Which we have no clue where it's at.
Nope.
The first fender hit pretty hard. I heard a crunch. So JKs have, for the guys who have CJs and YJs and other Js, they just have like a bunch of clips that hold these things on.
Yep.
And they're made to like hit that and break those clips.
Yep.
And you hit that kind of hard and broke about 40% of the clips. We'll call
it. Yeah, it's dangling there.
Yeah, it's dangling. So so you hit that, and I'm like, oh, that crunched. But if it was a TJ, that would have crunched the whole fender. So
right.
that's the beauty of these JKs and new fenders. They're built like that. So long story longer, he just didn't know. Joe didn't know that, you know, sometimes you have to imagine where that vehicle is. And here's a funny story. Everybody's driver's side wheels and vehicle looks way better than their
way better.
so which Wade like blew out a passenger side wheel, but it wasn't his fault. That was just a weird ass deal. But in the end though, so he hit that and he backs up and hits it again. So Joel gets past that part, but then Trollhagen has all these kind of whoop-de-doos.
That's right.
I call them whoop-de-doos. I don't know, they're called hot tubs in other places, but basically just kind of up and down steep little hills, and they're great in a two-door. Two doors, you do not touch a thing. You can go up and down those all day because you have that short approach, the departure, not short, but a breakover angle, the short breakover angle. But then there's Joe and his limo they brought with.
Yeah,
exactly. He kept on. And this is the first one he saw was this little sand hill. he gets stuck. So then there's a guy who was behind us. He had Sarge. We'll call it Sarge because that was the name on the side.
Yeah.
And this is why I don't put the rookie in the rear, because you need somebody to kind of pull you out.
Yeah.
So then, and here's another story too, is you don't want to reverse pull somebody out either, because you're – where your gears are lined up, it's not an advantageous position to reverse somebody. You can winch somebody out in reverse if you have a brake on.
Yep.
Winch somebody from behind. We don't want to back up and pull somebody out in reverse.
Nope.
It's bad on your gears. And so this guy, he do that. He pulled up, you know, put his, you know, back-to-back on the Jeeps, and he had a total back there. He had a purpose-built rig with 40s and the whole nine yards.
Oh, yeah.
He pulled out Joe once, twice. I think four times in the first hill, this guy just sat there and just waited after me. I'll just wait here.
Yeah. he became my best friend.
But the moral story is, like Joe said before, is like, I just didn't punch it hard enough. Like, when I say hit the gas, I'm like, hit the gas, like foot floor.
Yeah.
Because you need to go with it. But what's weird is the first time you jump your Jeep, you'll be happy, because we've done this many times now with ours. But the first time you can actually – it's almost speed. Sand is a different deal. This is a sandy spot. He had to go up, and then went down, and then back up again. So you kind of had to, like, hit it.
Yeah.
Down, and then hit it as you're going down the hill again, so you go back up the other side. It's how it went. And being, you know, I grew up in the ATV world, and I knew this from doing it thousands of times in a Jeep and an ATV. And I was like, I said,
hit it,
like, get it, pedal down.
Yeah.
A couple times you that day, I'm like,
oh yeah,
just to the floor.
And it's hard to, like, actually do it. Like, it took me a little bit to get comfortable doing that. Where one, sometimes on the dipsy doos, as you said, you can't see over the other side, which inherently just kind of makes me cautious.
Yeah.
But, like, just literally floor it. And once I kind of figured that out, how to be kind of aggressive going up over those peaks. Actually, the rest of the day, we did pretty well. I don't know if I even got – I may have gotten stuck one or two more times during the day, but it wasn't nearly as bad as the start.
Joe, you don't get stuck on bypasses.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Bypass Joe over here.
Another true story is the first couple times when I was off-roading, my jaw was so sore because I was clenching my teeth so much.
Yeah.
I was so nervous. And my brother, who's been on this podcast before, he actually got out of my Jeep and got into Brent's Jeep. That's how he met Brent. Because he goes, I don't want to ride with you anymore. You're so nerve-wracking. I'm like, I was like, I didn't want to break my Jeep. You know, I just bought it, and I was just stressed out. Now I can be sitting up going up a hill, and you saw me, and we talked about it a bit before. I went down this hole once, started climbing up, and my passenger wheel went in a hole, and my passenger wheel went on a log, and my driver rear wheel went in a hole, and the guys were off to the left of me. They could see the passenger front wheel all in the air. Because I was on the door, dang dear. I was, like, ready to go over it, put it in reverse, put it back down, tried it again, and did the opposite side. I was just all hanging out, like, well, I'm chicken now to do this. I am done. I tried it twice. Pull me out. I don't want to do it anymore. And then Brent tried it. Pulled him out.
He pulled him out. Yep.
And then we stuffed a bunch of logs and rocks and whatever in the hole. And Wade got, like, 10 feet further. They got hung up on a log. We had a windshield. Yeah. Like, I don't know why we're trying it. After that, we got to a point where we're like, okay, these trees are 45 inches high that we're trying to get over these logs. I'm like, let's just bypass this and go around this. Because by Monday we go, it's all dug out.
Oh, yeah.
But in the end, though, it was pretty fun kind of seeing you kind of see that. And you were still brave at the end.
Yeah.
And still going for it. And then I'm gonna fast forward a little bit because it's mainly the same story. You getting stuck a couple times, but you got over that. The breakovers weren't good for you because you're longer Jeep. But then we got to the trailhead at the end. Well, not before that. Before that, about halfway through the day, you're like, my Jeep is making a whole bunch of noise.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, I have no clue what that is. To me, it sounded like sand in the brakes.
Yep.
And we had no clue what it was. And then somebody else says, probably there's a shield in there. And like, okay, it's probably what it is. We're not really hurting anything. Let's just keep going.
Yep.
So we get to the trailhead and we're ready to wash down the Jeeps and kind of get out there. They have a nice wash station there. And all of a sudden you look up and like, I'm like, where'd your passenger rear or your driver's rear fender go? I'm like, I don't know. We don't know who that was. So if somebody like Bullhog with a JK or driver's rear fender, we know who needs one.
Yep.
But it was funny. I'm like, I goes, I don't know. But he says it. You said it with a smile on your face.
Yeah.
So you had a good time, and it was like, well, this is the price you got to pay when you go troll hogging, I guess.
Yeah. You know, and so I think if I had to guess, I know where it was on the White Trail, which was the second trail you and I did that day. There, about three-fourths of the way through, it was a slight incline, but they had big, huge tires that were kind of embedded as obstacles.
Oh, the tire deal.
And the tire deal, you remember that? And yeah. So I want to say I was finally driving aggressive, and I clipped too close to one of those tires. And Derek, who was my passenger, friend of ours, both of ours, that was in the car with me, and he and I looked at each other because something didn't sound right. But we were like, screw it, just keep driving. And so what I wish I would have done is probably stop and go back and look, because it was probably just hanging out right by one of those tires that I clipped too close. But you know what? At the end of the day, if all you lose is a fender, that's pretty good. Like you said, it's kind of the cost of doing business when you go out to troll hogging.
It's just a little bit of blood you have to give to the cause.
Yeah, exactly. It's pouring a little out at troll hogging, but in this case, my Rubicon looks ridiculous now without that back left fender. But it's an easy part to replace.
Well, people know you're serious. You're not just a mall crawler now. You're,
yeah.
You're serious business.
Yeah.
So I tried getting my brother-in-law to come with, who has a JK. I'm not going to name him, but I have a lot of brother-in-laws, and only one has a JK. And he goes, do you get scratched up there? And I said, oh, yeah, yeah, you're going to get some Minnesota pinstriping. Then I send it over the microphone to you, the walkie-talkie. I'm like, Joe, you're going to get some Minnesota pinstriping. Like, what's that? And I go, you're going to get some scratches.
Yeah, and sure enough, of course.
The trail that was like this for my Jeep would get scarred up, and then like that big old four-door is going to get.
Yeah, the tank I brought out there is definitely going to see some paint scratches. But to be honest, I didn't have too many. It was my front right fender. On the front side, as you said, crunched that a little bit, and that's still dangling. And then I completely lost the back left rear fender. But otherwise, pretty much, and then the brake issue.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So, yeah, to finish that, we pulled the tire off on the end. And you and Wade and Brent and I, you know, pulled the tire off. And sure enough, that plate that's guarding the brake completely bent in. And so we just kind of pried it off and hasn't made a sound since. So
yeah,
kind of one of those trail fixes that worked.
It was a stick or a rock or something that got in there and just bent a little bit, and it was making the worst sound every day
three seconds
driving.
But yeah,
we should have pulled it off a little earlier.
Yeah,
if we were nice, but
keep driving.
We want to get some flat ground, so we got some flat ground, jacked it up, pulled the wheel off, and right away we had it fixed. It was a 2-second job, really. A couple screwdrivers, we were set to go.
Yeah,
kind of bend it back, slapped it back on, ready to go. So now then you, what happens when you get home? Now your wife, what'd she say when you're missing one fender and the other one's dangling, like,
I didn't tell her about the dangling one. So she hasn't noticed that one yet. but yeah, she clearly knew it. And you know what? Christy had a pretty good, pretty good attitude about it. She's like, what were you doing? Right? Like, how did you lose this thing?
But in the end,
yeah. But you know, she wasn't too upset or anything like that, which is great. But yeah, so get home and had to power wash the Jeep again, as you can imagine, like the undercarriage, even after the good wash station at Trollhagen, just completely packed with sand and mud. And so I kind of detailed it a bit once we got home, just to get all the lodge sand and dirt out from underneath the chassis. But haven't done too much, but like you and I were talking about, I've got a full list of things in my Quadratec shopping cart that are about ready to go.
Just talk about that. So let's talk a bit about that. So now, right now, you just have the sliders, and then what do you order right now, and what are you thinking about ordering?
All right. Well, I am still debating between a couple of fender styles. So I've got a couple of those. I'll replace that back fender with you know, an aftermarket set so that they match. But really, you know, it was interesting. I mean, a stock Rubicon on its own, pretty damn capable, right? You can do a ton with a stock Rubicon.
Oh, yeah.
I never, you know, but there were still even, there were obstacles at Trollhagen that I don't think I really could have done, like what you guys were doing. And so there's, my wish list kind of starts with probably a 2, maybe a 3-inch lift. You know, the JKU, the long four door, I think can handle a three inch lift and look pretty good and look solid. So the lift and obviously 33s and maybe even 35s for tires. You know, if I really want to go do everything at Trollhagen or go up to Gilbert up in northern Minnesota, you know, the stock Rubicon is going to struggle doing some of those bigger challenges. You know, it's a climber, so it's good for hills, but the clearance, you know, I was bottoming out where you guys weren't. I was getting high centered where you guys weren't. You know, it's really evident a couple inches on the lift and bigger tires would help tremendously. Maybe, so those are two.
Our skid plates on the transfer case skid plates are well used.
Yeah.
So we were just going faster. We were getting hung up. We were still like touching.
Yeah.
But you were really kind of hitting it. So yeah, I think you would do really well with a 3-inch lift and 33s or 35s.
Yep.
I see a lot of guys run that for a long time and do pretty well. And it's really, you don't break the bank on a 3-inch lift or 2.5-inch lift on a JK.
Yep.
They're readily available. There's tons of them around, and it's pretty easy to get in there for that.
Yeah.
So the
lift in the tires, definitely, you know, first and foremost. Clearly seeing you, Wade, and Brent as well, I'll need a winch at some point. But when you've got three other Jeeps with winches, it's not a big deal, right? Not that I would ever probably be going out alone, but certainly if you did, you would need one because it's – you get stuck. It happened. I think all four of us at one point were stuck multiple times on the day. So you just need that. So winch and upgraded bumper to support it would probably be next after the lift and the tires for me. That'll be a good upgrade.
What's funny is you can use a winch to pull bushes out of the yard really
easily. Yeah.
I've done it 1, 2, 3, at least 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
And you just – sit there and go this, and
yeah,
you have little pops around on the ground.
Yeah, so
pretty handy for that.
Yeah,
so I enjoyed that piece too because I did that. I had two bushes here in the back of my house that I'm like they're just dying. Let's get rid of them.
Yep,
John and
yeah,
a couple times yanked them right out. But yeah, the most expensive part of that whole thing is probably the bumper, and there you can find one of those. The lift, obviously, the tires. You know, 5 tires aren't cheap.
No, nope.
But tires are like a usable commodity, if lack of a better word. So if your tires are going bad anyhow, well, might as well upgrade a little bit.
Might as well get a little more lift.
$400 more, and you get 5 bigger tires, you know, if you want wheels on top of it. The Rubicon wheel, I think you got the Ruby wheels on there. They're pretty nice. And
I was going to say, I actually like the Rubicon wheels. Is, you know, I would probably just swap the tires and go with 33s or 35s. I think I'm rocking 30s is what stock is at this point.
I don't know. I think there may be 32s. So I got to look that up. Just shy of 32s. I don't know.
Yeah.
But in the end, though, you'll be pretty dang happy with that. And power, you know, you got the nice gear ratio. So you're set up pretty nice for that.
Yep.
For
the better axles, you know.
Yeah. You know, guys like me who have to spend extra money to put the lockers in.
Yep.
But that's all coming sooner or later.
Yeah. The push button lockers and the push button sway bar disconnect are couple nice features that the Rubicon has, so you're not
the sway bar one goes, it doesn't always work,
you know. And in fact, I don't think mine did. Isn't that hysterical? I don't think my sway bar disconnect worked, so I'm gonna have that have our local mechanic named Wade check that one out.
He's called a wrench. But there's a show I call, I thought I had that shirt on. It's Venture 4WD, Venture Forward, is how he says it. But 4WD, I got a YouTube channel. He has a JK. He lives in it.
Yep.
All over the country. But his swimmer disconnect is barely ever works.
Yeah.
I'm like, just go with the anti-rock. Get a rock jock, anti-rock, whatever, like Wade has on his.
Yep.
That's on my wish list. But it was on my wish list before Wade was on his wish list. And
he goes,
oh, that's stupid. You don't need to do that. And then like 10 minutes later, he has it on there. Like, yeah. What are you doing?
What?
But in the end of the day, though, you know, it's always fun to have a wish list. Like you were saying, yeah. your inbox is full.
My shopping cart is busting. Yeah.
I mean, now my shopping cart has – I actually just received an order from – I don't know what's from Causer Tech. I ordered some stuff for getting my rear seal fixed because I had a little seepage going on.
Yep.
I talked to a guy. He's going to help me out with that. And somebody has a press at their house. So I'll have more on that in another episode. But the other day, though, are you excited to go out again?
Can't wait. You know, and particularly it was so cool seeing how the – so I've got two younger daughters at 7 and 10 and – oh, they loved it. And Wade brought his daughter and niece, or nephew, I should say. So we had some kids along with us.
Yeah, and my boy,
your son. Like, I don't even call him a boy. He's taller than you. we had some, it was such a good afternoon. And then to get out of there and be able to drive home made it all the better. And yeah, can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, soon we'll do it. So in the end, though, that's what I was looking for. I mean, I talked to a few different people today, and we're going to have this all out of order, so it's going to sound weird, but I wanted to go to order that people broke stuff on the trail. This it's called Trail Carnage at Trollhagen. It was just a fiasco in the end. We have never really broken this much stuff before. Just one guy will blow a tire, one guy rolls it, or whatever, but everybody's except for fifth gear Brent Snyder. He broke nothing.
He was
just a trail hero.
Yep.
The whole time.
Yep.
But it was good stuff. But Joel, thanks for being on here.
Mitch, can't wait to do it again.
Awesome. And then we're going to be out off-roading very soon. So, but stay tuned to the CrossFit Off-Road Podcast for more random crap that we broke weekend.
thanks, Mitch.
So we told you a few stories about a few of the Jeeps that broke down. And at the end of the trail, we had we were all lined up kind of reconnecting sway bars, redoing the things that we needed to, iron up the tires and such. And I pulled up to the wash station first, and then everybody else kind of followed me. So like, we might as well be at the wash station and do all this. That way we can just jump in there when it opens up. And which was fine. So we got there, and we were a couple people back in line. So we all start connecting our sway bars, getting out the air compressors and starting air up the tires. And a few of us have our own air compressors, and so we're going to help out the guys who didn't have theirs. And I think out of the four that were left, three of us had air compressors. So mine is an onboard air, like I talked about before, but the ARB, high capacity, not the twin one, but the second to the biggest one, I guess. If you're going to run air tools, that's why you get the biggest one. So I have it set up for the future for the air lockers and such. And I had it set up where I had a short hose from where it mounts in the TJ to the front of the Jeep, and I had the hood closed, which looking back I should have had the hood open, and I'll tell you why in a second. So Brett and I were kind of teasing, like, hey, we're only two Jeeps that really made it through unscathed, and kind of joking about that. And then I aired up three of my tires with my ARB, and then on the fourth tire, all of a sudden I hear a big — it sounded like a blown tire almost. It was just all a bunch of air released. The air compressor went higher pitched. So I shut it off. I'm like worried that I ruined the air compressor, like overheated or whatever. I'm like, gosh, I should have had the hood open, you know, that way I can breathe a little better and so on. Because the motor is running and the air compressor is running. I have the motor running just so it doesn't run the battery dead. I can run the air compressor better. And Then Wade looks at it. He goes, I think it's just high pressure valve, high pressure release. I'm like, I'm not sure if it's that. So I flipped it back on, and there was a hole that came out right as it connects from the air compressor to that line. I have the line just for convenience. It's kind of zip tied on and goes out to the front. That way I could just hook it up front and have the hood closed. Well, it got hot enough with the air going through it and everything. It kind of just blew the line. It's a softer hose. And so I don't know if that made a difference, but in hindsight, maybe I should have had some heat tape on next to the motor. Never had a problem before. Had to set up for, I don't know, a year or two. I'm not sure, over a year. So it just got hot and blew that airline. Well, luckily that airline is only about, you know, $10 to $15. So a replacement wouldn't be that much. So But I was looking at it as I was taking off parts to kind of get the airline to go, I was going to run to Menards and buy a new one. I thought, well, it's all the same inner diameter. Why don't I just hook the adapter point right onto the air compressor? So I went back, turned it all the way onto the air compressor, and turned it directly right onto the compressor. And flipped the switch. It filled up the small reservoir that's on the compressor and stopped. I mean, in a good way. I mean, it built up the pressure it needed to. So now, instead of having a hose, I think I'm just going to run my hose that I would use to fill up the tires directly from that point. Just have the hood up, hook it up beneath there, call it good. That way I take out a weak point. Kind of found the weak point this past weekend, and now I'm just going to, you know, hey, there's my, you know, now I don't have that weak point. So I kind of fixed it my own way by taking out that weak point, not having that hose on. I could easily put the hose back on if I feel like it for $15. But for now, it's good to go. I just need to have a 19 millimeter or adjustable wrench to kind of do that in the field. So now I know that. So if I want to have that, you know, if I want to have that hose on or that convenience out front in the future, I can do that. But for now, I think I'm just going to run it like it is now with that, you know, adapter point right next to the compressor. So it's good to go. So I'm going to leave it right where it's at. So in the end, Brent was the only one that didn't have problems. So that's kind of the story. Sometimes he's the one that has all the problems, and sometimes the one that don't have the problems. I think in the future, I'll always bring all my tools. I always bring, as we learned from a couple of other guys that are on here who have the tools or didn't have the tools, always bring the tools and you probably won't have problems. But if you don't have any tools, you might be stuck out there. I will always bring my big high lift jack. I didn't need it this time, but somebody else did. So it's funny how things work that way. But yeah, so we learned a few things on this trip, and it's funny how who had trouble and who didn't have trouble this time around and what we learned. But again, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to the Crossroad Off-Road Podcast, brought to you by Prime Shape Fitness, your one-stop shop for your fitness needs.